and we fought on both sides for this house to abolish Queen's SU. Also, I think on the 9th or 10th of March, we have the Dufferin Tournament, which is our BP tournament for all of our speakers. So anyone who's in the God people know what it's like to do a Queen's internal competition. So if you want to sign up for the Dufferin Tournament, be named the best speaker of the year, I can't compete. So I'm stocky. So yeah, if you want to sign up for the Dufferin, please just drop me a text, come see me in the pub, or yeah. That's all for me.
Right.
So as I announced last week, we have our annual formal coming up on Monday the 27th of March. So the link to sign up for that is on the event page on at Facebook, and just give me a message if you can't find it and I will send it to you and you can sign up for the formal, which should be lots of fun.
Anyone else?
Jack Sands and the external convener. I'm sure some of you will know we have the IB tournament coming up with the Dublin Universities, and I'm just looking for maybe some members of the society to host Dublin speakers whenever they come up on the 18th and 19th of March. Pretty much just to help facilitate them. It's a BP style tournament. If anyone else would like to sign up for that, that's also helpful. So come meet me in the pub or see me after the interview.
I will also point out just very quickly on that, that for anyone that has never done an IB but is considering it, the Dufferin is also BP, so you'll have a week in advance of having actual proper training. So yeah, if you're signing up for that, the Dufferin would be good.
Right.
Tom?
I'm Tom, I'm the outreach officer, so ordinarily it would be my job to organise the skills competition, which is coming up on Monday, for which most of the work has already been done. We are still looking for a few volunteers to help with the facilitation of the event to get students from room to room and things like that. So if there's anyone that is available on Monday, like help out again, come and see me in the pub or come and see me here at some point tonight.
Any other?
My name is Rory, I'm the new training officer. I can't there will be training workshops soon, but I'll let you know when that is. There should be an announcement on the Facebook page or Instagram page. So.
Is that all the council announcements for coming? Oh, James.
I'm the secretary, so it's my role to be completely disingenuous with what you said.
Guessing that's everyone. And now I'd like to welcome James Orchin, HLM, our new secretary, to read out the minutes.
Well, hello boys and girls. So, on the 16th of February 2023, in case you don't know what the year is, the Queen's University Belfast Literary and Scientific Society convened for its 17th ordinary meeting of the 174th session of the House. For the motion, this House regrets the rise of dating apps. For those of you who weren't here last week, this was 2 hours of my life and the lives of everybody else present that they will never get back. As usual, the meeting began with announcements. Fun. Ryan Hoey announced the Society's annual formal, the Conversazioni, which is to be held on the 27th of March. Dermot McSparran announced the NI Schools debating competition is to be held on the 27th of February, so don't get those two dates mixed up, they are different months, and asked for volunteer babysitters before being rudely interrupted by you. The House then unanimously ratified Daniel Toft as the tech officer, the only good point of the night. Following a particularly eloquent reading of the minutes, this meeting moved to private members' business. President Emeritus Daniel McCormick put a motion to the House bestowing honorary life membership to former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern, who reportedly never done us any wrong. I'd like to propose, however, to revoke this, as Bertie refused to come and address our society. Thus, I'd like to propose honorary life membership to the ghost of Charlie Hawkey. This wholly unconstitutional and therefore utterly pointless motion was passed by 25 votes to 7. That thing raised Nicola Sturgeon's resignation and compared it to that of Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand. President Emeritus Daniel McCormick, still here, raised my hostility to other countries, which I completely concur with and still hold. It's not anything to be neutral on, I'm just saying. So, then, Dermot McSparran then put forward a motion to have his brother Rory McSparran kept on the lead at all meetings of the society. For those of you who haven't had the pleasure of meeting a member of the society or will never come back again, Rory, could you stand up again? So I'm not really sure how best to describe Rory. I think I've noted down a Hunter S. Thompson quote here. One of God's own prototypes, some kind of high-powered mutant never ever considered for mass production, too weird to live and too rare to die. This motion passed by 22 votes to 4. Responses were heard from Dermot McSparren, Ryan Hoey, others apparently, I don't know, it wasn't noted down here. The two of them make up two of the horsemen of the apocalypse, or is it horse people these days? I don't know. Anyway, President's questions then took place. Jack Sands asked myself, the only president in recent years to serve out his full term without being removed in a coup, about Rory McSparren's drawing. Rory's drawing skills were then summarily judged to be subpar when compared to Rembrandt, but still somewhat better than modern art. Hopefully. Come back, Rory. Other people then asked other questions, such as ones about tray bakes for breakfast, something about milk, and something about Barbie. The only vaguely sensible question was asked by Terence Metcalf, who asked about a New Zealand pilot who had been captured in Papua New Guinea and who I would like to be kidnapped by. After the tone of that debate that was to come, I would love to have been kidnapped at that moment, because then I wouldn't have been subjected to that debate. Where's Roisin? Suppose she could maybe help with that. There. After President's questions, the vote of prior opinion was held. There were 11 votes for the proposition, 8 for nay, and 13 Alliance voters, so thus Naomi Long had it. First speaking on the proposition was Tolchin McSparren, who has been blessed by God Almighty to never have to speak at the Society ever again by virtue of being elected president. Some of you are not as fortunate. In an effort not to get sacked, I will say that her arguments were supremely intellectual and made perfect sense, at least as much sense as someone who's doing an English degree can have. She rambled on about Charles Dickens for a bit and made a reference to cats and dogs or something like that. Next for the opposition was Sean Carlin. He said something about mustard, though thankfully not Pat Mustard. Second on the proposition was Ryan Hoey, who showed us some of his messages, which none of us had to see. He also revealed that Sir Umarzeum HLM Esquire, which is exactly how it's written here, not by myself, but by our acting secretary, had once beaten a mouse to death with a wooden stick. For those of you who have never had the pleasure of meeting Umar, he's a bit like Rory. Rory had a mustache and a tweed suit. Now, second on the opposition was Jacqueline Bonner, who's sadly speaking tonight again. I know, why would you want to sign up for two debates in a row? In an effort to preserve the innocence of the children here tonight, I'm not going to repeat anything of what she said. But suffice to say, it was some Irish-American Kennedy family liberal gobbledygook. Third speaker on the proposition was Dermot McSparren. You are referred to this as constantly throughout this here, so I'm just going to keep going. He went on for a bit, liking about tray bakes. He also rebuked somebody, and I think he quoted his favourite political idol in a debate on dating apps. You know.
What was the question? Very relevant.
Yes. Well, you have no. Third speaker in the opposition was Matt Walker. He argued that Tinder protects us from Dermot and then said something about Churchill. I'm not on Tinder and I've not been protected from the demon that is Dermot. And perhaps I committed some heinous crime in a past life and this is what I'm being punished for eternity, having to do this here. The final speaker was that thing there. Now let me explain her to all of you here. She's the proverbial bad penny that never goes away. And regardless of how many cars you run over her, she will keep coming back. In a speech that will henceforth be referred to as the death of reason, she said something of her. She also revealed that men flee from her. I can confirm that this is 100% true. Finally, the debate was coming to a close with the final speaker for the opposition. Zach Savage said something, but by this point our acting secretary Sam was losing the will to live, had a nervous breakdown, and was humming hymns under his breath. Near my God to thee, as the ship slowly went in to the North Atlantic. And then he started writing messages a bit like Jack Nicholson in The Shining. All debate and no play makes Sam a dull boy. Points of information were heard by various people who I'm not going to go into. Following the debate and questions from the House, the voting speaker ability took part. 10 voters for the proposition, 12 for the opposition, and 5 alliance voters, so the opposition had it. May I take the minutes as read?
Aye.
Every week, this is not rare.
By the way, we're friends.
I mean, sort of. It only gets worse.
Oh, yes.
And now we move on to private members' business, where it's everyone's turn to talk. Anything you've heard in the news this week or just you want to bring up, please do now. But please keep it PG-13 as well. So please state your name.
So, Madam President, members of the House, as you know, I had to travel to Dublin twice in the last week. I'd like to ask the House, why are Irish free staters the way they are?
Anyone to respond?
Do we have to?
Please state your name for a minute.
Jacqueline Bonner, because we have a functional government.
you?
Man in the suit, please state your name.
Daniel McCormick, I assume by the way we are, you mean absolutely fantastic.
Any other?
No, listen, I will hear no slander of people from my country. Now, the people from my country, we rally behind one no more. One no more, we've never done any harm to any of us. And then, it might be a harm now.
Anybody else to respond? Any new pieces of private members' business?
Mind it.
Don't look.
No.
Noah Burnley for the minutes. I was looking at the news this afternoon in class instead of paying attention, and I saw that Keir Starmer came out with his 5-point plan, and I thought it was rather bland. It was, we're going to have the most prosperous economy in the G7, we're going to do something about education, we're going to do something about prison, and we're going to do something about other things that no one cares about. So I was wondering if the House agreed with me that this bland approach to politics is hopefully something that's going to bring a bit more peace, because I'm sick of the polarisation.
Person sitting beside
you? Yeah, my name's Kerr as well. So essentially what I think is a massive problem in the left in general across Europe is they can't decide how left they want to be. Because essentially if they go kind of down the Jeremy Corbyn route, they're too extreme. If they only propose kind of minor reforms, they're basically accused of being too in centre, or even, dare I say it, right wing, or Keir Starmer. And essentially, a massive issue is that you kind of, how do I put this? They're being too vague in the sense you have to outline how you're going to perform this, otherwise, it just sounds like a bunch of vague, empty promises that have been buzzwords that essentially have been spouted by a lot of parties just in general. But yeah, personally, I prefer Labour to the Conservative Party at the moment, but it's kind of like they need to really take advantage of the fact that Rishi Sunak's ratings have pretty much plummeted into the core of the earth at this point. And they're not taking advantage of it, and they really should.
Tom Burns, I think to an extent coming off that they're doing exactly sort of what they need to. They don't have to do much more because soon I think boys have created. All they have to do is sort of not trip over their own shoelaces and they're probably gonna be alright. You know, like Victor is more or less it's very safe. All they have to do is kind of play it relatively safe. That's just probably what they're gonna do anyway. And they get in the government, they'll be a very sort of safe-ish pair of hands. So mess up some wrong way, it'll kind of look like it'll be just very mundane, half technocratic governance for 5 years, and then something that will happen, we'll all come from the zone, except what they will do then.
State your name.
I think it's quite good that Sir Keir Starmer's come out with the 5-point plan. Rishi Sunak also has a 5-point plan, and the 5-point plan that I think that he should have gone by though is Sir Geoffrey Donaldson's 5-point plan. currently doing very well. So back at the election last year, Sir Geoffrey said the choice is between our 5-point plan or Sinn Féin's divisive border poll. And the 5-point plan was deliver 30 hours of free childcare per week, which he's already achieved significantly. Fix the health service, he's done that. He's growing the economy. Remove the IRC border, the IRC border's gone, and keep our schools world class. So I think 5-point plans are very good and always succeed.
Anybody to respond to that? State your name for the minutes, please.
Sam, 5-point plans are always good. I seem to remember Joseph Stalin. I also remember Hermann Göring's 5-point plan. 5-point plans are always the best thing in the world to do. Perhaps.
Yep.
Dermot Hummel, I made my own 5-point plan. So, first of all, I think we should make Bertie Ahern the president. I think, and this is for the society. So you're fine. I think that we should protect the rats of Donnybrook Street. I think we should give a HLM to Terence Pringle Metcalf Esquire. We should rename Londonderry to Coleraine. And we should ban nationalists from the society.
I'll go to the person in the red shirt.
Misha Gerard for the minutes this time will be taken down. I just wanted to ask why what I brought during private members' business to the House last week was conveniently left out of the minutes this week.
Oh.
I think it's a fair enough question.
Yeah, that's right.
The minutes generally are usually not everything that was put in that was said during the debate. It's like if you notice in James' minutes, or the James' minutes, Sam's minutes, but the like most of what people said throughout the whole debate in terms of the like arguments that they made weren't taken down either.
I just felt it might be of significant importance.
Oh, they can be amended.
Also, in terms of if you have any problems with the minutes, the secretary can always be asked to amend the minutes. Most of the minutes go up on the Letterfish website.
I would like it included.
You can request, and when they go up on the website, it will be included.
Anybody else on this?
Yeah, okay. I'd just like to quickly respond to Ryan. In what way has Rishi Sunak fixed the healthcare industry in this country?
I was referring to Jeffrey Donaldson's 5-point plan, and it was a joke because obviously he's not holding.
I'm half dead.
So he can't fix the health service. He's not settled. He's not
really any new pieces of private members' business?
So this hasn't been brought up yet. I find it vaguely interesting. So essentially what has happened in America recently, well, it happened kind of either last week or the week before, and it's slowly kind of escalating in terms of the Chinese kind of spy balloon that was seen over America. So essentially, for those of you who don't know, there was an unidentified kind of air balloon that was shot down, and then it was very clearly made to be, you know, it's kind of a foregone conclusion now that it was sent to spy, and it caused kind of an international incident, and, you know, deepening kind of issues between America and China, and I wanted to ask the House's opinions on it.
Anybody to respond?
I was going to say, it just sort of reminds me of sort of when the U2 spy balloon was shot down in the Soviet Union after, you know, during the Cold War. And I thought that it didn't actually really strain relations too much in comparison to other events, you know, in terms of any, like, prelude to any conflicts or wars. So I wouldn't be too concerned about it in terms of it's just been a spy element. Like, I think everybody knows that we're all being swindled.
And that's we should be.
President Emeritus, I guess.
This isn't any comment that I have on any spy rooms. I don't have opinions on. What I'd like to ask is, does any of the students, and if not the students, any of the teachers, have anything to say about any of the pieces of private members' business that's been rolled up?
Not under pressure.
Agreed.
We'll take everybody's all in make his speak.
Anyone?
You'll slow them very hard if you don't.
I see him do it.
Also, we're very nice, I swear.
If not, I'll take one more new piece of private members' business.
I'm not talking about
or, wait. You haven't spoken, okay.
Oh no.
So please state your name for the minutes.
It's Rashi Newman. So you're the first female president, of the Glitterific in how many years, right?
Seven years,
which is fantastic to see, and hopefully it'll be better than your predecessor. Some of you were in the room, but you're hoping to be great. I think that you deserve a round of applause for your awful.
Very much.
I think in the name of feminism, it's time that we as a house decide how we're going to coup Talgene.
Actually, I want to hear this.
I don't have a point on cooing you. I just want to say I was an excellent female president of the league.
And with that, I think we'll move on to President's Questions, where you get to ask me anything you want for 5 minutes, and it's going to be hell and owned. I'm going to start with you. Please state your name for the minutes.
Jacqueline Bonner. It is my solemn honor to be the person to ask you first, what did you have for breakfast?
I mean, I already asked you what I should lie I had for breakfast, and yeah. You said, and don't I lie, come make it come from the too. Heart. So I had toast with butter. No, not. Mr. McSmartin.
So, Madam President, I've asked the last two presidents this question, which means I've asked it at least twice in that month. So, I'm going to get in trouble for that. Will you condemn the French?
I fear that I might get cooed if I say that I won't. Maybe if you like coup me French Revolution style though, and it like combines
so
the two traditions.
The
I condemn the French. To the man in the grey jumper, please state your name for the minutes.
So as it's the Thatcher debate tonight, I thought I would give you all the Thatcher quotes to respond to, which is, if you want something said, ask a man. If you want something done, ask a woman.
I've already said I'm not going to be a Liz Truss, I'm going to be a Thatcher and run for 11 years as Glitterific president. But at the same time, I can't really have like a political stance on it, so I'm going to quote an old president emeritus and Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. To the person with the flag. Please state your name for the minute.
So there's a random society.
I know, I can't promote without explicit.
It's not advertising, it's not
advertising. It is.
I'm right tomorrow.
What should we get it right
there? I'm going to this formal. The feminist formal. On the
end of the I'll probably be going to that one as well as our own Glitterific formal on the 27th. Yes. And I'm not going anywhere near the English formal. To the man in the black jumper, please state your name.
You know who I am. Have you finally found out who Julian Simmons is?
I did. His birthday was the day of our EGM. And so you were honouring him on the day of our EGM by
that was deliberate,
going up to me and saying,
Madam President, I pass motion.
Oh, I like that.
I'd like to pass a motion that this House will at least honorarily bestow honorary life membership.
I can't write this fast.
upon Julian Simmons.
I'm actually.
Okay, if you would bestow an honorary life membership on Julian Simmons, please raise your hand and say aye.
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 Oh.
Oh, you can do it if you guys want.
Get that hand up.
There, it's just a mark.
Get the hand up, man. Okay.
Yes, you guys.
Guys, you team.
Okay. 17 votes.
Participate, you're fine.
If you don't want Julian Simmons to have a HLM, please raise your hand and say nay.
Nay.
One.
Oh, Jacqueline Bonner.
Shame.
And if you don't know who Julian Simmons is, please abstain on the motion.
That's just
weird. Okay, well, I think.
How many?
17 to 1 to nobody abstained, apparently, as well. That means, not actually, but Julian Simmons does have a HLM. To you. Please state your name for the minutes.
Can you do your best,
Julian
Simmons?
I honestly don't know who he is. I looked up a picture.
I'll
He's an old man. I don't really know who he is. Any other?
I do. As Madam President, I've asked recent acting presidents this question. I'm going to repeat the same one to you. After the election next year, how many MLAs do you think the Green Party are going to have?
I mean, I can't really have a political opinion on this.
Yeah,
it's
not
but I know, but I.
If
I had to, I would say none. Like, if I had to say what I think. And that is the end of our 5 minutes, unless, I guess, one more president's question. So now we move on to the vote of prior opinion. So the debate is, this House believes that Thatcher saved the economy. So if you think that she did save the economy...
Can I just clarify before we go to the vote of prior opinion that everyone who's here as a guest is the can actually vote. So please express your opinion on the motion.
Yes. Yes. So if you believe that Margaret Thatcher did save the economy, please raise your hand now and vote with the proposition.
Vote yes.
Terence, I understand. Terence.
He's the only one
that
was around to say it, so take his opinion on it.
And... If you wish to oppose the motion and think that she didn't save the economy, please raise your hand now.
Also, if you don't have an opinion, that is also an option.
No, it's not.
If you don't know, it's fine.
I have an opinion.
If you wish to abstain on the motion, please raise your hand now. Okay. You got 10. Okay. Could you please announce the vote of prior opinion?
So, on the motion, there were 8 votes for aye, 28 votes for nay, and 10 alliance voters. So that means, I think by a squeaker, the opposition has it.
And with that, I'd like to welcome Sam Hazlitt to open the proposition.
Why is that funny?
Just going to savour the illusion of power. Mr. President, Madam Secretary. Sorry, wrote this a couple of weeks ago. Actually didn't write it, but what was I going to say? Yes, members of the House, Childer, I would first like to give some context to the scope of this debate. In particular, we live in a certain part of the world which has a troubled history, and I don't agree with everything that Ellie did, but she certainly played a blinder by putting this as just the economy, because if we had to debate about everything Margaret Thatcher did here in particular, well, we would be here for a month of Sundays. So I will begin by giving a bit of context.
Month of Sundays.
Hi.
Never had
time to use.
Huh?
Month of Sundays.
Hi. Hi. I'm never going to get to this. What?
Love the day.
I don't care. Oh, we've already lost. What, 30 seconds in? Right, whatever. A bit of context. During the 1970s, there was in Britain and, well, Britain and Ireland throughout Europe, but particularly in Britain, very high inflation. There was very, very, very poor industrial relations. I think that is to give an understatement. Companies such as British Leyland and other coal mines and things like that spent more time out in strike than they did when they were working, and even when they were working they were busy making Austin Allegros, so I'm not sure we can count that as work in particular. Very, very low productivity, again evident in the Austin Allegros. Successive governments led by people like Harold Wilson, Ted Heath and Jim Callaghan, none of which are remembered particularly favourably, seemed to think that the role of government was simply to manage the decline of the economy, which had perpetuated for it throughout the years, pretty much since the war. When Margaret Thatcher came in 1979, she was succeeding Jim Callaghan, who has been, I would say, was the worst Prime Minister of the 20th century, but that's probably been a bit too generous to Neville Chamberlain. Also, he did not know what was going on. He never knew what was going on at all. His famous line, he didn't actually say this, but everybody attributed to him, crisis, what crisis? That was him. Some of the tax rates in the country were as high as 95%, low productivity, very high inflation and quite high unemployment as well. I know everybody blames Thatcher for it, but it was very, very high beforehand as well. And the state owned pretty much everything. They owned the airports and the airlines, they owned BT, they owned the lorries and the transport, and they owned a removal company for some reason, and despite research I have no idea why or when they decided to do that. In terms of the implementation of this, Margaret Thatcher stuck to principles such as that government does not make wealth and the businesses do that. I think that was made fairly clear by the governments that came before her and the sort of economic policy that was set out. So she set free the industries into the free market with a massive programme of privatisation. And I will, before someone argues about the trains, that wasn't her, that was John Major. I think we can all agree that was a complete and utter disaster. But she privatised the airlines, the railways, the other transport companies, BT, everything like that, and pretty much set them free outside of government regulation. She made tax cuts. She definitely did. She's very famous for making tax cuts, but it's interesting to know that in her first few years in office, she didn't actually lower taxes at all. She raised indirect taxes, such as VAT, but she didn't go into a massive programme of tax cuts. And this is the difference that I think, that is the difference between her and Liz Truss, whose premiership was not very long, but a complete and utter car crash. Literific is experienced with presidencies like these, but... not you in particular, don't worry. With Liz Truss's premiership being such a disaster, being led by that complete cabbage, there's clearly a complete difference between hers and Margaret Thatcher's. Liz Truss went into everything far too quickly. Sorry, it's gone blurry. Sorry. Whereas Margaret Thatcher did wait a few years before enacting reforms.
On that point?
Yes.
So how do you attribute, if she waited a few years, how do you attribute the fact that manufacturing fell by 30% within the first term?
What?
Manufacturing fell by 30% within the first term.
What I mean is, I don't mean she waited 3 years and just sat and twiddled her thumbs. I mean that she didn't go into it at the deep end like Liz Truss did with her particular choice of policy. inflation was another problem that had been growing throughout the 1970s. And it was tackled not by wage controls, as Wilson's government and Callaghan's government had tried and failed to do so, but by fiscal and monetary discipline. And by the end of her term, inflation had been greatly reduced. You notice there aren't any statistics in this, because I do not like statistics, and they were all different. So I know this is apart from everyone. Why are they all different statistics? I don't know that anyway, but ever. Unemployment. Now, this is where it's going to get tricky. Unemployment, it did increase under Thatcher, I will admit.
Unemployed?
Yes.
How much?
I don't know. Everybody says something different. It is very odd, though, that the Guardian figure for unemployment was quite a large bit bigger than the other ones. I'm not sure about that in particular. But she did close quite a lot of coal mines. And this is where I am going to get attacked while leaving the room. But I would say that those coal mines were very, very unproductive. They were uncompetitive in terms of cheap coal coming in from China and places like that. And I also note with interest that the leftist people these days like to talk about... Yes?
Time.
Is it break of time?
Yeah, there's no bow, so...
Oh, right, that's very high tech. Is it the first one or the last one?
Second one.
Oh, thank God. Yeah.
Daniel, give it back.
What was I saying? Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, sorry, I'm enjoying a sweet.
Left nowadays.
Coal mines. The people who argue against Thatcher these days often argue the coal mines should never have been closed and then try to associate themselves with movements like Extinction Rebellion and things like that. And that always seems very, very odd to me. We should never have closed the coal mines. Coal kills people. So, in conclusion to this utter car crash of speech, I would say that inflation was reduced by Margaret Thatcher, economic growth went up, and the stagnation that had existed pretty much since the war was finally resolved. Is that it? Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Members of the House, Proposition, Opposition, and whoever is still on the Council. My friends, the Proposition will argue, have argued, in favour of a rose-tinted version of history. While the 70s were undoubtedly a very tough time for the UK economy and the West more widely, it does not follow that it was Thatcher who saved us from this. In fact, much of the problems that we now face today have their origins in her decisions that have left scars throughout the country to this day, which I will go into later in my speech. But first, the facts, or actually, no. It's not about keeping the coal mines open, but rather leaving something behind, leaving something for the ex-workers other than heroin and destitution. I'm so glad that the Proposition brought up as well. How much was it before Thatcher when it was the worst it had been? 1.5 million. How much was it for the majority of her reign? Over 3 million. She ran on the slogan, Labour isn't working, and then proceeded to double the unemployment rate. A true girl boss move for sure, but the economic saviour, not so much. And that was far from the only thing that she also doubled. By the end of her reign, violent crime had doubled, almost as if destroying communities and increasing poverty had some sort of correlation there. But of course, she denies that she saw crime as an individual issue. So of course, she had no responsibility for increasing it by such an extent. So why was she so popular? Why did she win landslide after landslide? Well, the majority that she did win in 1979 was the slimmest share of the vote of any winning party since World War II, except for the two elections in 1974, because as usual, this was an election Labour lost rather than the Conservatives won. If it wasn't for fortunate circumstances in the Falklands for her, it's unlikely that she would have won in 1983 at all. The country was whipped up into a patriotic frenzy that makes war such a perfect election winner. We should really be asking whether it was Argentina that saved Thatcher rather than Thatcher saving anything. And if it wasn't for the discovery of oil as well in the North Sea, then she wouldn't have been able to fund her handouts to the rich. A key factor of the chaos in the 70s, aside from the oil, the global crisis, was the aftermath of the Barber boom, a short boost from tax cuts, the original Liz Truss move, before the economy collapsed from not being funded. I'm sure the oil crisis played a large part, and many economies suffered. But the UK was the only one that went bankrupt and needed an IMF loan. So you see, With Liz Truss, she tried tax cuts, the economy crashed. Anthony Barber tried tax cuts, the economy crashed. And so we think Thatcher had some sort of genius with that. The proposition seems to think that you can run an economy entirely from the supply side without having any demand to drive this growth. Government spending on housing dropped by 60%, homelessness rose by 38%, and sure, right to
on
buy...
That point,
yeah, go on.
I can't remember what intellectuals said it, but all the statistics are different. I can't remember where I heard that from, but what do you call it? You're relying on these statistics. Why not tell us something aside from the statistics?
Sorry, you can't let me finish. I was getting into that. There's just a few there, but well, anyway, right to buy. Don't worry, there's not a whole lot left. Don't worry, I've got the rep for drug addiction, which is not a like the panel source, it's a government statistic. But anyway, right to buy, sure, it was good for your aspirational working class bloke eager to rise up the social ladder, but it left little less for those who hadn't cashed out as they saw their council rent quadruple. Council estates subsequently became hotbeds of crime as only the most deprived and vulnerable were left behind. And the statistics on drug use, the reliable statistics from the government.
On that point?
Go on.
You're making a lot of arguments about morality, but at the end of the day, facts don't care about your feelings. You need to establish how it's actually bad for the economy, for the nation as a whole, instead of just saying that a bunch of bad things happen after drink.
I'm sorry, is unemployment not a measure of the economy?
Well, you need to tell you how it is.
I think that would be one of the main measures of a healthy economy is unemployment rates. But in the end, yeah, while she did reduce taxes, that was only for the rich. While our tax rates, the tax rates of everyone else, actually increased. And when it came to increasing VAT, any guesses who that disproportionately affects? Who most of their wages go to VAT? Well, it's not the ones who got tax cuts. And, and this is the cycle that we continue in today, with the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer. But it's tell us the economy is booming while our wages stagnate. Whose economy is it? Certainly not ours. At least GDP growth was good. You may say, oh yes, that classic measure of the economy. So I can say on our way to the food bank from the heat bank, oh, GDP growth is 3%. That's excellent. The economy is doing great. by selling off our public services for literal peanuts, this is what allowed the energy companies today to exploit the war in Ukraine for profit, extorting a public that has gotten poorer and poorer each year for the very last pennies that we have. And if we want to solve this problem by renationalizing natural monopolies that have no business being subject to the free market, we would be buying them at a loss, considering how cheaply they were sold off. It gave the public purse a short boost while she was in reign and gave us long-term problems, sacrificing the health of our economy for a longer period than she was in time. She was in power. She dug up the foundations on which our economy rested, and we have been sinking ever since. In 2020, the top 1% captured 63% of all new wealth created. We're on an unsustainable path of increasing inequality, and Thatcher played a key role in putting us on this path to not just injustice, but destruction of all the efficiency that capitalism is supposed to encourage. These so-called free marketeers seem to love good old monopoly when it's natural, when it's a natural monopoly, and levels of inequality which make any fair market competition impossible. For every opportunity for entrepreneurism this is created, it has created several more opportunities for rentiers. And hence we now find ourselves at the inevitable conclusion of this process, a low-wage, low-growth economy. Thank you, and vote for opposition.
Thank you for a really good speech, and I'd like to welcome the second
proposition, yeah. Matt Walker.
Oh, I guess I don't have a long, good, like, welcome for children and gems and everything. I just have a definition to start everybody off, sadly. So Thatcherism is the political and economic policies advocated by British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, obviously, including but not limited to the privatisation of nationalised industry along with trade union legislation. Now, in the past, before Thatcher came to power, Britain was in decline ever since, basically, the war, right? There was... What's that look for? Britain... Right? There was a slight, post-war boom, but really, like, rebuilding your country after it's been bombed to hell, I think, would, you know, make anybody's economy improve. No, I don't. Because actually before, in 1979, inflation was at 23% before Thatcher came to power.
On that point?
Yes.
Why is that bad?
Why is inflation bad?
Yeah.
Is that really a question?
So, explain to me why inflation is bad.
Why inflation is bad? Are you familiar with Hungary in 1946? In which people's money in the banks literally just became worthless, and the price of bread was literally in the trillions, in which case, who decides who gets bread in the end of the day, other than violence and, you know, survival of the fittest, which really is against what a society is in the first place, which is just anarchy. Over the course of Thatcher's government, it dropped as low as 3% in 1986, and at the end of her time in office, inflation was only 9% in 1990. Through her time in office, unemployment did rise until 1984, where it hit a peak, and then after that returned to the rate of about 2 million, not 1.5, by 1990, as it had been in 1979.
On that point?
Yep.
Okay, so we're hearing a lot of, oh, this is bad, and this is bad on one side. You need to determine what's more important to measure an economy. Why is a better inflation better than basically the economy? You need to establish what is the worst evil. Otherwise, it's just a lot of, this is bad, without me comparing what's actually better.
Okay. I don't know how to do it from that. I mean, do you want me to define what makes the economy good? Or is it just in general?
Can you stop bullying the speakers?
This is my second speech, like, straight at me. Not an easy one.
I'm training you.
Where is our training actually? Where is the trainer? Needed help right now. as I was saying, apparently GDP is not a very good way of measuring people's economic, like, their own, the country's economy, which I don't really understand, because economy is basically how much money the country has.
On that point?
Which, yes.
Do you think it's more fair to say that Thatcher's premiership had more of a priority on reducing inflation rather than reducing unemployment?
Yes, yes. But also, I think that Thatcher had a long-term plan in mind, which people sort of forget, which I know, obviously, without the Falklands War, it wouldn't have been able to get re-elected after 5 years when employment was at its highest. But people forget after 10 years, when all of her effects actually had time to develop, there was, like, Thatcher's Millionaires, and she did get re-elected for 3 terms. So she did, which, you know, like, you can't be that bad of a prime minister to be re-elected 3 times. She also... I heard Dermot first go on.
Really?
I mean, but okay, right, okay. But if Thatcher was, like, so bad to the economy, right, how come Labour had to move to the centre in order to compete with her economic policies? I would take them, no, sure, go on.
I don't want to continue the immense pressure you're putting on the national election. I actually one simple question.
Yes.
Why do you hate the poor?
Well, as a rich landowning Protestant, I think you can see why. So.
Right.
Right. Thatcher believed in economic freedom. Okay, she believed in the right of a farmer to wake up and go work on his own farm. Right, not collectivized farming that would lead to poverty or starvation like it did in the Ukraine. Another term of a another 5-point plan failure there. But another quote from the lady herself, as Thatcher said. You know, oh, before then, Britain's money was being spent by socialists who had no idea how to run a country or a business themselves, okay? Pennies don't fall from heaven, they are earned down here on earth.
On that point.
Oh, already? Jesus, okay. I'll just end it with that, but thank you very much. Please support this motion.
Ladies and gentlemen of the House, there is no secret floor to this debate. Despite the mental gymnastics the proposition may go through trying to change the aims of the proposition, my teammate has already taken you through the disastrous impacts her policies had long term. We believe that Thatcher's legacy among the common people of both of the British Isles is earned, and we seek to walk you through why. Starting with the title of the motion, Saving the Economy itself insinuates that she combated and triumphed over the issues that plagued Britain. This is most commonly argued by how she shook up the financial sector, lifting the UK out of an economic dark cloud that had lingered since World War II. Though the UK experienced a slight economic upturn during her time, economic growth in the aftermath of her prime ministry does not constitute saving it, especially when her and her cabinet had little to do with its cause. Additionally, the other problems the country did have got worse, such as unemployment and the tax burden. To play in a capitalist system, you gotta know the capitalist. No. To play in a capitalist system, you gotta know the capitalist system. And in what is more predestined than a Calvinist for a capitalist system other than economic busts and booms? Nothing she did was conducive in aiding labor efforts, restoring jobs, or helping the country, though her propagandists, chiefly the news industry, which would have you believe otherwise. Her miracle economic restoration was nothing of the sort, simply a credit bubble that, when it shortly later popped, left Britain in recession once again. She was also applauded for sticking to her monetarian policies through good and bad times. Yes.
I'm going to keep doing it. Yeah. You started with saying about the mind games that this lot are playing with the motion. They get to put forward a proposition and an argument to support the proposition. I'd advise you to respond to their argument as opposed to coming up with an opposite or an argument that you can respond to yourself in your own speech.
I wasn't saying that they were actually putting the mental gymnastics into defining the motion. I was saying that believing the fact that they're on that side has meant that previously, before this night ever occurred, they have been playing mental gymnastics with themselves. I don't think they did do that shit.
It's like this every week.
I'm all right now.
Good for you. Thank you. Though the model she based those policies off of, Milton Friedman, was not in fact very similar to what she applied to Britain. As soon as the economic pressure got tough, she kind of loosened it up and became a filthy centrist, if you ask me, God's sake. I genuinely believe that the UK has had such a long, respectable history of politicians not doing anything, that when a politician does anything, it stands out by comparison, and the age-old game of correlation and causation starts playing roll call. Or how about the claim that in deregulating the market and lifting some taxes for the rich, she made Britain a viable financial hub of Europe? Time for fun little Southerner opinion corner here. We pity Britain. We see the UK as economically full of strife, politically chaotic and elitist. Any haven for financial institutes that the UK may be, it doesn't help the vast majority of the country to the extent that Ireland has established it, and it has not improved its reputation to its closest neighbors, so how can it have saved the economy?
On that point.
No, thank you. Additionally, the title of European financial hubs belongs to Ireland, Switzerland, Germany, and finally, and I compliment them with great prejudice, France. I feel dirty for saying something good about France. On an international level, at least, Britain does not even threaten the peripherals. So far from Thatcher, we have hypocrisy, class trader activities, and an economic fuckery, but not so much a savior of said economy.
I need that for swearing.
I've never heard a swear word.
Don't say that word, okay? I'm so sorry to the progeny. Point. You guys are our future, and I'm corrupting the minds of the youth. I'm sorry.
On that point,
yes.
You referred to Thatcher as a class traitor, and yeah. She went to Oxford. Surely she was protecting the rights of those that she was amongst the class of.
Do you think that just because she went to Oxford, she didn't start out working class?
No.
Class traitor.
No, she didn't.
A little bit of a funky little wraparound. I'm an ex-Christian myself. I try to make it my business to know everything I can about so-called saviors for the pure purpose of talking crap about them behind their backs to similar non-believers. Unlike Jesus, Maggie Thatcher didn't know when to die when she had a low popularity rate. I've started... yes.
Do you think Thatcher, like Jesus, is going to rise again?
Similar to King Arthur, I think that when the apocalypse is starting, they're both going to walk up hand in hand with Thatcher as the once and forever Queen of England.
On that point.
No.
Will Jesus be there soon?
I said no, David! Now for the American Opinion Corner, I'm here to make a definitive Reagan comparison. No, she claimed her deregulation and appeasement towards well-off establishments would benefit Britain by trickling down. But instead, due to her targeted taxes and contribution to shutting down several avenues of UK employment, the poorest got poorer and the rich got richer. Additionally, on the matter of Reagan, she too was not much fan of the queers, and because of that, an enjoyable movie involving her influence on the mining industry got made. She shanked the mining industry so badly that they started accepting strike aid from poofs and button sewers, as enjoyably portrayed in the 2014 film Pride. I'd like to let the record show I use the term poofs and button sewers in the most affectionate, non-cancelable way possible. I may have thought my short hair would save me from Twitter when I wrote this, but I've come to the realization that Twitter has fed on blood for much less, and I'm wearing a bandana. But you know who else would be canceled on Twitter nowadays? Miss Maggie Thatcher. Am I out of time? 2 seconds. In recognition of the fact that as a southerner with an American accent, I do not have the first-hand experience of the UK economics to speak further on the matter, I'll surrender my time with a closing statement because, again, like Jesus and unlike Miss Thatcher, I know when to die. Thank you, vote opposition.
I bet you're all regretting the journey down from Newry for this. But anyway, to start with a few points of rebuttal to the opposition's argument. Firstly, there was the point raised. I think lots of the points that the opposition are making in tonight's debate are very short-term. They're looking at the immediate impacts of Thatcherism. For example, the stat that Aidan used about the 30% drop in manufacturing in the immediate years of her premiership. But actually, by the end of Thatcher's premiership, manufacturing output was 7.5% higher in 1990 than in 1979. It shrank as a percentage of the overall economy as other sectors like services and finance grew, but it did grow nonetheless. Then there was the points raised about the closing of the coal mines. Well, this was actually part of a long-term trend, as Sam mentioned in his speech. And in fact, Harold Wilson's Labour government closed more coal mines in 5 years than Thatcher did in 11.
On that point?
No, thank you. Now, there's also been arguments made by the opposition this evening about the fact that Thatcher just catered to the rich. But in fact, the contribution of the richest 10%... No, thank you. The contribution of the richest 10% to the Treasury grew from just over a third of income tax receipts to nearly half during her premiership. Also, the idea that the 1980s was some era of financial deregulation. Well, in fact, the life insurance industry was regulated between 1980 and 1982. Bank deposit insurance was introduced in 1979. This wasn't some era of just get rid of all the regulations and let people do what they want to do. There's also the point about unemployment. Now, I think as Matt raised in his speech, the unemployment rate did double from 6% to 12% between 1979 and 1982, but actually came back down to 6% by the end of her term. And to address the point that Kira raised in her fine point of information about why should the immediate priority have been inflation rather than unemployment, the reason for that is you can't have a stable economy if there is these huge, we're seeing it at the moment, huge rises in inflation, which then cause huge pay demands, which then put businesses out of business because they then have to pay more, and there's this vicious cycle. So Thatcher's whole thing was get control of the money supply, get inflation down, which it would cause, when you reduce demand in the economy, it does cause immediate problems with unemployment. But once you get that stable inflation rate, and this is what Gordon Brown recognised in 1997 when New Labour came in, is if you have a stable inflation rate, you can actually have both low inflation and low unemployment. So the reason Thatcher saved the economy is for three main reasons. She made us competitive by lowering marginal tax rates and freeing British industry, ended industrial unrest by democratising the trade unions, and brought inflation down through tight control of the money supply. The 1979 budget started the shift from direct to indirect taxation, which is important because it's less distortionary of economic activity. And high earners had left the UK in the 1970s, which meant less tax revenue to pay for the public services that we all rely on. So Thatcher reduced top marginal tax rates, which were actually 98% in the 1970s, not 95%. So if you make £1, you get to keep 2p. What incentive is that for people to work and invest?
That's not a marginal tax rate.
It's for every additional pound. Which is actually more important than the overall effective tax rate, because that's your incentive to work that extra shift, or to, you know, the marginal tax rate is actually more important than the overall tax rate in terms of incentives. But what the opposition said, it's just not true that there were no tax cuts for those lower down. The basic rate of income tax was cut from 33% to 25% over her time in office. Now, this made the UK a more attractive place to work and invest, as I just said. And then when we look at the privatisation programme, which may move inefficient state industries, and Sam mentioned British Leyland, and my granddad worked at British Leyland, and apparently when you used to go to the toilet in British Leyland, you'd have to knock on the door and say, genuine SHIT, because there were people just sat on there, you know, bunking off, basically. So, and also during lunchtime, the people who worked at the head staff at British Leyland had to go across the pub across the road and drag all of their workers back across. It was a very inefficient industry, and it's no wonder that it went bust.
On that point,
go ahead.
Just
again, looking to get down to the root of the proposition's argument, and I just wanted to clarify with you if you could expand on why exactly you hate the poor.
Well, to quote Mrs. Thatcher herself, if I can find it in my notes. Mm-hmm. I can't. I've got so much. My notes are just so. Give me 2 seconds.
Just say something in her voice.
Oh, here we go. So, when she was asked about inequality during her time in Premiership, she responded, "In fact, all levels of income are better off than they were in 1979. But what the opposition is saying is that they would rather the poor were poorer, provided the rich were less rich. That way you will never create the wealth for better social services as she did." And yes, they would rather have the poor poorer, provided the rich were less rich. That is the socialist policy. It came out. They didn't intend it to, but they did. So, am I out of time yet?
No, you've got 25 seconds.
A whole 25 seconds. So, I think I thoroughly... No, that's his stuff. I'm not doing that. It's protected time. Anyway, I think... I've quickly rattled off how much rubbish the opposition are talking, so yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
A really good speech, and welcome in
Lauren
to
Pilsen. Antifa's America. You don't like them? All right. Oh, I've been making a few notes. Right, so first of all, I'd like to thank you for welcoming back the Students' Union, and I'd like to say mazel tov to Talcha for, you know, winning the presidency, if I'm allowed to speak anything Yiddish, of course. Just to go on to the first point. Now, I've noticed the proposition has made a lot of stats about income tax, made a lot of stats about inflation. Now, again, we've raised a lot of questions about what is the economy. Economy is essentially a made-up construct. It really means nothing. It's essentially trust me. Economics, that's the study of scarce resources. The economy, the British economy, that means something. The working class economy, that means something. Women's economy, gender economy, you know, these are all things that mean something. The economy in general means absolutely very little. So, when we're talking about the economy, can I say that? Not yet? All right, I'll get around to it in a second. But when we talk about the economy for who? Because if you look at the actual statistics on the metric of quality of life, you can't provide a single statistic. If you look at malnutrition... If you look at malnutrition, child poverty, suicide, drug rates, crime, all of which increased during Thatcher's years. And that now, I recognise these are just the short term. So we can go into the long term. I go on.
To quote a former non-biased member of the House, what kind of commie gobbledygook is that?
See, that's quite good. I feel like I'm the only person who's actually read economics and can also throw hands. All right, Tiernan.
If Margaret Thatcher was a bit modest as she was, why did she steal my mother's milk?
Actually, can you get your mum to give me back the milk I gave her? Like, that was what? All right, sweet. Oh, go on, Daniel.
Speak. Expanding on a point that Brian Howe made during his speech.
Please don't.
where he directed a point that hadn't occurred to me about the opposition in tonight's debate, and I'd like to ask you personally, why do you hate the poor?
What type of poor? I say, what kind of flavour of poor are you talking? Because I've got a different answer for all of them.
Oh no.
Sorry, I'm running for the Students' Union election. Please vote for me. right.
Showing off your speech somewhat.
No, but I'm not going to respond to that because, again, running for election, but I'll ask it in the pub after. It will be ethnically based. For clarification, I am Jewish. So going back onto the former point, long-term benefits of Thatcherism. We've seen, now, the narrative being peddled by this ludicrous fucking display, sorry, I know all children in the room, all that, is essentially that the atrocious Labour government just left the country in a mess and just ran off. Realistically, it was more of a case of dependencies. The Labour government was unfortunately dependent, and Britain and the West was dependent on oil, which a Middle Eastern trading bloc called OPEC were able to use to leverage their political situation. Then they became dependent on the IMF in order to gain loans in which to pay off the debts used to pay for the oil. See, the common currency through this is dependency. Now, was Thatcher's response to reduce this dependency? No. It wasn't to build resilience? Absolutely not. It was to create more dependency. So, if you look at the housing market, for instance, with a massive sale of council housing, which has led to massive increases in, what was it? Is it house prices are 1,000% more than they were back in the day, I reckon? Sorry? Aye, go on.
No, that, the problem with housing since then is the constraints on supply in terms of housing regulations on planning. But on the fundamental point of right to buy, my grandparents bought their council house through right to buy and now have an asset to pass on to their children.
Absolutely. How much? Okay, fantastic. Yeah, so the right to buy was a fantastic idea that you can buy the house if you take the debt on. So what has created now? The level of debts we've seen in Britain have massively escalated, which is completely and utterly fine if there's not a financial crash. Oh, what happened in 2008? So is this a sustainable economic system? Absolutely not. We see more levels of dependency occurring with, like you said. Now, while manufacturing may have been increased by 8%, but has shrank overall, with service-based industries being 78% of the economy, I'd also like to reference the point that we are basically dependent on every other country to export it to us now. Now, this would be great if it weren't for a trading calamity. Oh no, what happened with Brexit? So now we come to the third point of dependency, which is the local areas being completely and utterly dependent on the cities. These kind of bourgeois metropolitan elites, and we are completely dependent on the rural communities, completely and utterly devastated at. Now, I don't know if you can tell off my accent, but I'm from where Billy Elliot was filmed. might be a reason why I'm not particularly a big fan of Thatcher. But we've seen a complete and utter destruction in our local community. So, Thatcher's short-term solution to dealing with this problem was the equivalent of solving a headache with a guillotine. This is a complete and utter catastrophe. There's no short-term benefits, no long-term benefits, and these are all Tory tossers. Gamble yourselves. Thank you very much.
Point of order.
Point of order.
I think there was a comment that was second opposition that while no matter what background we all come from, I think that the language used was, I'm not going to repeat it, I think specifically with the audience, especially that we have today, I think that the language used was unfair, and I think that if it is in the minutes, it ought to be struck from them, because I think no matter what background we come from, that kind of discriminatory language not only goes against our starting orders and constitution, but I think it is no place in the debate in society at all.
Motion to strike.
We can just strike it.
Yeah, and now we also have times for questions at the end, so anybody can participate in this. You want to ask a question to anybody who has spoken tonight, please put up your hand and I'll accept it. Yeah, so a question for the proposition. Anyone have one?
Right, so there's kind of an economic theory. Now I don't know. I'm not a huge astute person on economics. But essentially, there's a theory that I think is very interesting in this debate. In that, in societies that are based on capitalism, essentially they are doomed to both go through booms and busts and booms and busts. So I would like to question, would this really be enough, if she did in fact save the economy, would it be more about this boom and bust effect that essentially all economies under kind of capitalism typically go through, or would it be Thatcher herself?
I think that the boom was certainly a lot bigger than the bust. And the problem is that when there's a big rise in prosperity, people don't seem to notice it as much. But then when there is a dip, it's like it hurts quite a bit. But in terms, I don't think the fact like it's often blamed the 2008 financial crash on Thatcher's Big Bang in the mid 1980s. But I kind of, as I went into my speech briefly, the early 1980s were actually a big period of re-regulation of certain aspects of the financial services industry that actually hadn't been regulated since the 1870s. And then there was the, basically with Big Bang, it was just allowing more types of firms to buy financial instruments. So you have that early period of action where she actually regulated the financial industry more, but then did a bit in terms of Big Bang on liberalizing slightly. Really, the issue with the financial crash was more towards, you know, I'd say, the Blair era, where they did a big deregulation of the financial services industry, and then there was the crash. But it's not like the financial services industry is like a wild west. Like, other than like the nuclear industry, I don't think you could find an area of economy that is more highly regulated than the services industry.
Opposition to respond.
Well, I'm sorry, she's already started speaking.
Can't see it.
This whole thing of like boobs aren't felt, but like that. What are you reading? What economic literature are you reading that? That doesn't really make any sense. If you want to learn more about this kind of process, dialectics are a there's no way to stress that at all. Like, and look, yes, there was definitely an element of what we can tell from that is the fact that the general West tend to improve economic operations with the Soviet Union at a period of time, although obviously the SDA later on. There's also a consolidation of political power, and obviously we can't separate politics from economics, no matter how much we might want to try, because they're just not separate, and if you think they are, then that's all the same. Political economy is essentially what we're looking at here, and there was definitely a period of essentially imperialist colonialist control that did benefit the economy in some kind of ways, but I'd say that doesn't necessarily mean anything to do with the economy necessarily as such. And again, I reference one that the economy is, you know, we need to define what the economy is, like more so than it's far from abstract to really go into.
Yep. And do we have a question for the opposition on this?
Yes, I have one. It was actually the reference to Billy Elliot which sparked this. Have the opposition considered that those opening years of what Thatcher called, I think, good housekeeping that put the state through penury was in fact a cleverly devised ploy to make starving artists produce their best work? Who were there at the time, and we're talking about here names like Bob Marley, The Jam, The Clash, The Associates, Captain Sensible, Public Image, The Injury of the Balkans, Judas Priest, The Motorhead, The Specials, Let Me Go, The Tribes, The Manners, and Buster Blood Vessel.
All of those people started before the 80s.
Opposition to respond.
I can take it again.
I mean, it's not the economy. Sort of like, yeah, she doomed the economy, but that makes great music, so maybe that was worth it.
I would say that if that was cast out of his pit lane, he thought of great work at Bart's, but he wasn't able to choose from anything.
Have proposition to respond.
Well, I mean, Terrence actually makes a very good point, because if I some of the Beatles that actually moved away because of the high tax rates in the 1970s. So the music industry framework for those high earning individuals does actually matter. But yeah, the point that you made, I don't think it's very related to the economy at all. But when I was a A-level politics student, I was asked to find a song that represented my political beliefs. That is the song that I'm in love with Margaret Thatcher. I never played that in front of the entire class.
Of course you did.
Not enough.
And do we have an abstaining question?
Now, this is the only time in my life I'm ever going to defend Thatcher, but how much blame can you really put on one person? Yeah, how much blame can you put on one person when the conditions given the time were right for everyone? Can you really apportion all of the blame or none of it onto one person?
Proposition.
I think that's actually a really good point, and that was kind of one that I raised in the speech about the coal mines, is that obviously because Thatcher closed loads of coal mines, it's now blamed on her, and obviously I don't think she did enough to put in place programs in areas where mines have been closed, because the people who were mining for years had very few transferable skills. But at the same time, that was a general trend across the Western world of the move from manufacturing east and the move to services. And the point I raised about how many coal mines Harold Wilson closed. So I do think that there were certain things that are pinned on Thatcher that actually were part of a general trend across all Western economies. So I think it's a good point that you can't necessarily say conclusively that Thatcher was solely responsible for everything that happened in the economy in the 1980s.
Opposition response?
The proposition is attempting to claim that Thatcher did save the economy, so the kind of a word I've learned recently, the onus is on them. But in response to that, it's definitely it's a question I shoot people at. Let me talk about the manufacturing being moved to the east, the same as the manufacturing in America is moving towards Mexico and Latin America. What we're actually talking here is a new form of colonization where cheap labor now is under authoritarian regimes and is then passed through cheap tariffs, cheap trades through to the Western states. And I think this is a policy that actually very much supports and support this with their policy of imperialism and neocolonialism. So I don't think it is too dissimilar. But yeah, I mean, she's not entirely the blame, but she definitely didn't save it, which I think is the point of the debate here tonight.
I think that's about all the questions.
No.
Okay, so now we move on to our vote of speaker ability. And this is not about what you believe. It is about who you think, which side you think spoke best and proved their points best on the debate. And everyone can vote. I want to put that out there. Everyone in the room can vote. So if you think that this side of the debate spoke better, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
You can vote, by the way.
I think so. This side.
I'm only voting this way because I hate it.
I got 18. We got 20. Oh wait, no, he's got 20.
No, I know I'm trying to.
I got 18.
I got 20.
Okay, it doesn't matter, 20. Yeah. And if you think that this side of the debate spoke better, please raise your hand, Sarah. Sure.
That
means there's going to be more of them. I got 25. Okay. And if you wish to abstain on the motion, you don't have an opinion, please raise your hand. None. One. Two.
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 And if the secretary could please announce the vote on speaker ability.
Very jumbled assessments of people counting. The proposition had somewhere around 20 votes, the opposition had around 23 votes. And there were two extensions, so about from our side to a margin, the opposition has it.
Before you go, next week's debate is this house. Is it? Oh, doesn't matter.
Right.
So,
before Tanta tries to coup me, next week's debate is this house would embrace nuclear energy as a renewable resource. So, we have one space left on opposition, I think. Opposition?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, we have no spaces left. Following week, I think, is this house regrets the Reformation. I think there are speakers for the proposition. Possibly up, but I think there are spaces for proposition on it. And similarly, again, if you wish to sign up for the Dufferin, I'm not sure. If you want to sign up for the Dufferin tournament, you can see me in the pub or drop me with a page of a message. Or if you really want, you can send me an email to sign up for the Dufferin.
Okay, ask something. Will I be judging or can I compete?
You will be judged.
You can.
We'll see.
But yeah, that's all from me.
Yeah. So I'd like to once again thank Sacred Heart Nuri for coming tonight, and please could the speakers come up for a photo now, as most people in the room, well, some people in the room make their way to the pub afterwards. I forgot to do the rules for the debate, so I sat on and I was like, oh, well.